Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of this station. Hello, this is Dig This Environmental Watch, featuring, featuring Phyllis Pollack, animal rights activist, and I'm your host, Pamela Spoto. Craig Boyer will join our discussion, and Shane Houchins is our engineer. And I think as we go along in the program, I'm going to ask Phyllis Pollack a little bit more about what it means to be an animal rights activist. But I'm going to start by reading her biography because I find it fascinating, and I would like the audience to know more about Phyllis Pollack. So Phyllis's family moved from Oregon to Redding in 1955. She grew up here when Redding was a lovely small town, she said. And she attended Shasta College and received a bachelor's degree in anthropology from CSU Chico. She also received an elementary teaching credential from Chico, but never taught. While she was looking for a teaching job, a friend called her to ask her if she would like to help at Shasta College. She loved the atmosphere, her co-workers, and the students, so she worked in the admissions and records office for 35 years. And I remember that, too, because I was there when Phyllis Pollack was in admissions and records. She retired 9 years ago and has been working harder than ever as a volunteer for Another Chance Animal Welfare League. She has served as president of the board for the last 10 years. Prior to that, she served as president on the Haven Humane Society board for 10 years, and that is where she learned a lot about animal welfare, enforcement, and rescue. In May of 2005, a group formed Another Chance Animal Welfare League with the concept of having a no-kill option for animals in our community. By August of that year, they had secured a space for a thrift store and were on their way to becoming a bona fide 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to rescuing and adopting animals. Only after 7 years, they were able to purchase 8 acres with 2 houses, a garage, and a barn so they could establish a no-kill sanctuary. It has been a tremendous amount of work by volunteers, but they have made a difference in the lives of animals in their care. They continue to hold high standards and make improvements in their physical spaces and in their procedures. It is a labor of love with heartwarming rewards. So welcome, Phyllis Pollack, to our show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Did I mention that you were here too, Craig? I'm telling the audience.
You made mention of it, yes.
So we're all here, the three of us. This is very good. And I'm going to start a little bit with a little bit more about her biography and what she was saying in that. So you grew up in Redding, and I kind of wanted to know a little bit about your personal history. Did you have animals when you were growing up?
Yes, we did. We always had dogs. It took a little while for my mom and I to convince my dad that we needed cats. And then, you know, once we moved to Redding, we had pasture around, so we had horses. So I grew up down on South Bonneview riding horses in what is now a golf course and housing, all of that. But we always had dogs, cats, horses, always.
And so, following that up, because I'm thinking about other people and other people's children, when did you realize, or maybe as a child, it wouldn't be like, well, I realize I have a fondness for animals. It would be more like, you know, I love animals. I like being around animals. But do you feel that you, as through your childhood, you developed this love, this compassion, this care for animals? Or how did that come about, do you think?
I think some people develop a care and a fondness. I think some people just have it in their soul. That's it. You're just born with this bond with animals. And, you know, I can remember as a child feeling like everyone's run out on me except my dog, you know. And a horse that stayed at our house for a week before it was supposed to move on to my uncle's. And I went out, had my arms around the horse, like, we're going to run away. I won't let them take you. You know, I think, and my mom remembers me chasing my aunt's cat because I wanted to pet it. And it's just, you know, it was just innate, you know, just there.
Right, right. Well, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And well, what about now, Phyllis? Do you have animals?
Yes, yes.
What do you have?
Cats right now. We had
many?
A dog.
How many?
We live in the city, so just six.
Six cats? Did you just say six cats?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, see, at the sanctuary, we have over 100, so
right.
I feel like a piker. We had a dog. We have had dogs over the years, and the last dog, friends of ours did rescue at the Katrina storm, and so I said, you know, if you bring some home, I'll take a lab cross, whatever. And she, after a great deal of hassle getting these dogs on the plane and everything, she brought us the most wonderful dog we've ever had. He was a big old lab. I think he was a lab Dobie cross, but and the people had just driven off and left him. They had taken the mules and they just drove off and left him. And he was a wonderful dog. So we had him until he developed cancer and we couldn't have him anymore. So far we just have cats.
That is so interesting. And that brings up a couple of other points. And one would be, when there are storms, when there are fires, when there are floods, what about the animals and what do people do? It's beyond belief to me to leave an animal. Mm-hmm. How could a person leave this beautiful lab? Or I rescued this, he's a Rottweiler cross, and I found him tied to a tree.
Oh, wow.
And I just went, whoa, how can people do that, you know? Mm-hmm. So... and I know that another big storm is supposed to land in Texas tonight, hurricane strength.
Yes.
Is going to be moving down to New Orleans around that way. And every time, there are the animals. And what do we do?
I was curious, Pamela. Your dog was, you found attached to a tree.
Yeah.
Where was this?
It was not too far from where I live. It was out in the country, and he was just left tied to an oak tree.
Oh, man.
And nobody claimed him?
Nope.
So I
felt really guilty because years before that, and I wrote a poem about it, I saw this old black dog walking along the side of the road. I get kind of teared up even thinking about it. And it was traffic and they were doing road work and I couldn't stop. And I just thought about that old black dog walking. And this Rottweiler was tied to this tree. And I wasn't going to pass him by. So I stopped and I took him. By golly, and I called various places, and I looked for posters and stuff, and there was nothing. So I kept him, and I've had him for 3 years now.
And I think they always know when they've been rescued, and they never stop thanking you.
That's it, and we really have a special bond in that way. And that must be very, very difficult. I wanted to ask you one more question about that. You said a friend or whomever that was that brought some dogs back from Katrina, the storm Katrina. To get them on the airplane to do all of that, that just isn't...
It was a major ordeal because he was over a 100-pound dog, so she had to buy a special carrier. And I think she brought maybe 7 or 8 dogs and a cat. And she gets to the airport, and these people have a rescue too. And they had done lots of people search and rescue. So she got to the airport, and all of a sudden they're telling her that she may not be on the same flight as the animals. And that was just almost more than she could stand, you know. So she fought diligently until she made sure that all of the animals were on the same flight, and she got them home and got them placed. And so I've always been grateful to her because she was that was just such a wonderful dog. He was a good boy.
And I wanted to continue with a little bit more information about your bio that came up in your bio. And you retired, and in my opinion, that would be a very intense job in admissions and records after a very long time working there. And now, would you say your focus is primarily working with animals?
Yes, yes, it is. It's this is a small organization, and I guess that's probably what amazes me more than anything is how small we are and what we have managed to do. And it's only because all of the volunteers work tirelessly. You know, we have tremendous bills, and so we're always trying to find new ways to have fundraisers and make money. And we don't get any funding from anything. And you know, we write for grants, and I think we've only gotten one. You know, we continue to write, and fortunately, we've had some good luck with help as far as finances, but. For that amount of time, after 7 years, to be able to purchase 8 acres and that property for the no-kill sanctuary is amazing. You know, it's absolutely amazing. And then the improvements that we had to make. It was a foreclosure, and there was a lot of garbage on the property. And, you know, we've had to put gravel and windows and other buildings and fencing. And so it's just been a lot of hard work, dedicated people who just feel passionate about the mission.
And so maybe we could talk about this process a little bit more, especially in terms of funding and how people could help. And we'll talk more about that as the show goes on. And I was telling Phyllis before the show started that I live between Reading and Palisadro, and I shop at the Holiday Market. They have a wonderful organic section there, I just want to say. But the no-kill or the animal sanctuary, the Animal Welfare League, is right there within that complex. And so I stop by there regularly and leave a donation and maybe get a... I got this for 10 cents. I just want to say I happen to be wearing it
it's
today.
The best deals in town, I'll tell you.
We found several items there this last year.
Oh, yeah. Books are great. And I think the last day of the month, everything is 50% off. It's amazing. So yeah.
I was very surprised. I've gotten some glass cookware as well, because I really like the glass cookware. So that would be one of the funding sources would be the thrift store.
Yes, absolutely.
And within the thrift store, you do have some animals there.
Yes.
And then in another location is where you have the 8 acres with the barn and houses.
Right.
And could you tell us a little bit about that space?
Yes.
I mean, what you have there? And
We have the small one-bedroom house where the caretaker lives, and we have the other house has 2 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, and then there was a two-story garage. And I think the people who lived there originally lived in the garage. And so, but like I said, it was a foreclosure. So we had to jackhammer the floor. We had to rip off the sheetrock. We had to move the stairs. And so the garage now has cats downstairs and some upstairs and kind of an office space, and then the house we had to completely rip out, you know, some cupboards and shelves, and it was dark. It was wood paneling and everything was dark, and so we had to, some contractors came out and helped us paint, and one of our volunteers was able to buy new flooring for us, and you know, and so it's a nice, light, wonderful area. It is clean, spotless every day, and you walk in, it's just a lot of kitties living, you know, who didn't have any other options, and now they live there. And we try to get them adopted. If they can't be adopted for whatever reason, they can live out their lives there. So now, in addition to that, we have built another area for what we call FIV, which is like kitty AIDS, which isn't extremely contagious, only through deep puncture wounds. So they're separate, and they have 2 indoor and a big outdoor all fenced area. And then we have a feral area. So part of the barn is sectioned off, thanks to, there were 2 foremen from Gifford Construction that I will love forever who came out and helped me build a wall and fence it all off. And then we trenched the outdoor area, trenched that fence down a foot so nobody can dig out or in.
Oh, good.
And covered it with the top. So they're feral cats that live out there. So all these separate areas have to have care and make sure, you know, especially when it's so hot this summer, we have misters and fans and swamp coolers. And so we have to make sure that everybody is cool and comfortable and well-fed and cleaned every day. So it's the labor.
And I do want to say, you know, this show is Dig This Environmental Watch. And so listeners might ask, well, how does this fit into the environment? And to me, it is very obvious that we're all part of this web of life, mm-hmm. humans and other living beings, as well as plant beings. And
how we treat our animals is how we are, you know, treating one another.
Absolutely.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And it how we treat our animals reflects a lot about us as a matter of fact. And I want to talk more about that too. So you have, I want to be clear on this, you have over 100 cats there now?
Yes.
And so that would mean that you have to have people or a certain number of people there every day.
Every day.
Every day. Feeding, caring, cleaning, mm-hmm. petting.
Medicating.
Medicating.
Talking, yes.
Are they spayed and neutered?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
That's good to hear.
Yes. And you'll be glad to know, the litter that we use is walnuts. It's from walnuts. I think it was patented by Haven, and so we get that delivered. And so it's environmentally friendly. You know, it's... and you can only imagine how many animals have not been born because they come into our care, and we make sure they're vaccinated, they're spayed, neutered, and nobody goes out adopted until all of those, they're tested and vaccinated and spayed and neutered. So
two more questions about that. So, for example, maybe you could give our listeners an idea. If you were to go out there in the morning, what would it be like in terms of what would you do first, second, third, fourth? I mean, how would you go about your day spending the day out there? Or how does a volunteer, what does a volunteer do? And does the volunteer work 8 hours or 4 hours or different? So what might you do?
Well, for me personally, I need to give medications. Mm-hmm. And so the caretaker and I kind of split that up. And so that's first and foremost, check on the ones that need medication. There's one that has seizures, so she will have medicine all her life. There's another one that is on, you know, another medication that he has to take forever, and one that has chronic upper respiratory. So the medication is first, and then it is, you know, you wind your way through a lot of cats, and they're all lonesome. They all want to talk, and they all want treats, and we spend a fortune on treats. And so we grab a bucket and a scoop. And we scoop the litter boxes, and we, clean, give them fresh water and food, and sweep and mop if necessary, and be on our way. So depending on how many volunteers we get every day, you might be able to get it done in 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, if everybody is there and moving right along.
It sounds like it would take a great deal of coordination in certain kinds of ways. I mean, 7 days a week, volunteers. I mean, you can't go. I mean, obviously, the animals have to be fed. They need the medication, and that kind of thing that has to be done every day.
Mm-hmm. So we have calendars because obviously everyone's a volunteer, and so if somebody has to be gone, then they put their name on the calendar, and we try to find somebody who will cover for them. And it's constant trying to find enough volunteers. You know, I put ads in the paper, and we put ads on our website, and we're always recruiting, trying to find more volunteers, so it lessens the load of the other people who are there. So, yeah, every day, because they need care every single day. And so it's...
How many volunteers do you have currently?
You know, I think we have probably about 50, you know, and not at the sanctuary, there aren't that many. There are several people who work, I think there are 3 or 4 of us who work 2 days a week. I'm there every day because I have to take care of my feral guys and give medicine. And then, when you think about, well, there are people who foster, and then there are the people who work at the thrift store, and we get donations from Walmart. So there's somebody who goes to Walmart and picks up the ripped bags of food and litter and everything every day. And every once in a while, we get to go down to Red Bluff to the big warehouse and pick up a lot of stuff. So we have storage units. And so our reach of kindness goes farther because we help other people who maybe can't afford to feed their dogs like they want to, or we help, like in Bernie, I think there's a group called SNP. We give food to them. Chick Miller has Bella Vista Farms, and we try to save blankets, towels, and we give her food when we can. And so we try to have the fingers of kindness going out farther and farther. We donate to One Safe Place when we have things that are pertinent for them. We donate to there's a church. There was a church in Oregon that was helping children with clothing and shoes. And so we always put that stuff aside so that we can send that to them. And even some of our local homeless people, you know, we have helped them with their dogs, or we have provided coats or sleeping bags or whatever. So the compassion isn't just limited to animals. You know, we help whoever we can, whenever we can.
And I want to remind our listening off audience, you are listening to Dig This Environmental Watch. I am host Pamela Spoto. Phyllis Pollack is our guest today, and we're discussing animal rights, no-kill sanctuaries, and hopefully how we can teach our children to be more compassionate. KKRN Community Radio is listener-supported. Craig Boyer joins our discussion. So now back to our show. So I love the saying, the reach of kindness, the fingers of kindness. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is so wonderful. It makes my heart feel good that
it's a ripple effect.
It mm-hmm. is, and you're connected with other sanctuaries, animal sanctuaries, but also with people in need. Right. As well. So it sounds like, I mean, you do get some volunteer donations, let's say, of food for the animals, but it seems like you would need a tremendous amount of money. So besides having the thrift store, you have fundraisers, is that correct?
Yes.
Is that another way that you're able to
get money? Yes, we do. We have fundraisers. For many years, we had one called Furball that we had at Wind River. And this last year, we had Wine and Whiskers that we had at the Red Lion. We have small fundraisers all the time. Like at the thrift store, I think on the 9th, we'll have, it's Honeybee Festival. And so it's kind of a community thing. And so we will have breakfast burritos and, you know, everything's on sale and everything. And so, and then we have what we call Critter Kitchens, every couple of months out there in Palisadro. For $10, we all cook, and everybody is a good cook. And so you can get all you want to eat, whether it's soup or Mexican food or, you know, whatever it is. Food, salad, you know, coffee, water, whatever.
And that's at the thrift store?
No, that is at the...
the Honeybee.
Well, the Honeybee Festival, but when we have the Critter Kitchen, it's there at the Grange Hall?
Yes, oh, yeah. Yes.
Because they have a nice little kitchen
they
and
do.
Everything. And
yes.
So we rent that. And yeah, for $10, it's a great deal. You can eat there or take it with you. And we always have, they make homemade cookies right there. We have two volunteers who make homemade cookies right there. They call junkyard cookies. And so they serve them warm.
When are you going to have the Critter Kitchen then again?
You let us know. So,
yeah,
because I do the community calendar. I want to be sure that I've got,
okay.
got you in there.
Okay, that's a great idea for the community calendar. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it would be.
Send us the word.
September 9th will be the breakfast burritos at the store. That one will be at the store.
Give us 2 weeks in advance so that we can put it on.
Okay,
so
I will do that.
So at the thrift store, on September 9th, you're going to have the
breakfast burritos and big sale. And
that's not the fur ball.
No.
The fur ball is at the casino.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so the next big one, we may just do a Wine and Whiskers again, because that was kind of fun.
Wine and Whiskers.
Those events they're hard on our volunteers because, like I said, with a small volunteer base, we're busy doing the day-to-day. And then you have to take time out to do all of the laborious detail work of a silent auction and a raffle and, you know, getting everybody together and centerpieces. And so this last one we did at Wine and Whiskers didn't make as much money, but it was good and it was fun. And so we'll do another one of those. So
do you also have mailers? Or I mean, there must be some people that really are on top of what you do, and maybe they just send donations in every...
They do, yes. And our website has a place where you can donate. Yes, we do have some volunteers who just regularly send us a donation every month.
Do you want to tell us what your website is?
Mm-hmm. It's you can either put it in ACAWL or Another Chance Animal Welfare League, and it will come right up.
ACAWL.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then it will come up.
It will come up, okay. Right there.
And then people could get information about, more specific information about what we're talking about here, how you do what you do, and how they might help.
Right, and then it's a link to Pet Finders, which it's kind of a national organization. So you just put, if you were looking for, a dachshund or something, then you would put that in what area of the country you wanted it. And so all of our pets, all of our adoptable pets are on there.
Good, good. Well, could we talk about dogs just for a moment? I know that you said that primarily you deal with the cat. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, because I've gone to the Palisadro Market there, and I don't know on what particular day it is. As I recall, there were people sitting in chairs, and they did have some dogs out front.
Mm-hmm.
But you were saying the codes are different if you're going to be dealing with dogs.
With dogs at a sanctuary.
At a sanctuary.
Yeah. So all of our dogs, so we don't have as many dogs, all of our dogs are in foster care. Now, the advantage to that is that people know those dogs inside and out. They know how they are with people, with strangers, with cats, with everything. And so we do have dogs in foster care. And now we do adoptions at Petco every Saturday.
Oh, okay.
And so, again, we've had to round up some more volunteers because we have cats there and they have to be cleaned every day. So that's another set of volunteers. So we're about to get that going again. And then every Saturday, if you have a foster dog, you can bring it in.
And, I see. That's
and then we have something called Pet Partner, where someone says, I have to rehome my dog. We're moving. I can't take him. Then you make a contractual agreement with us. You can bring the dog to our adoptions. We adopt the animal according to our regulations, which are very strict. And then we'll adopt them, and the dog can be seen, through our organization. So
this just so I get it more a little clearer in my mind. So in terms of the dogs, they would contact your organization, and then there wouldn't be a place that the dogs would be housed. You would call a foster parent, or a foster person, and say, "Can you take this dog?"
Right.
Or you would have a list of people, hopefully, then that you'd be able to place a dog with for
right.
a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if somebody happened to be looking for a dog, we network with lots mm-hmm. of other organizations, mm-hmm. so we can look and see, okay, you want a yellow lab, or you want, whatever kind of dog. Like we were talking about, there are a lot of pit bulls and chihuahuas. And so
I was telling Phyllis earlier that because I do subscribe, or I do donate to some animal sanctuaries or rescue places, and I receive mailers from Haven Humane, and I open up the pamphlet, and there's just picture after picture, photo after photo of pit bulls, and I go, oh my goodness, and that is so difficult because our culture in some ways seem to be afraid of pit bulls, and they think they're one thing or another, and in my opinion, it has a lot to do with how they're raised, but they're probably genetically, they do have a certain personality as well. But it's so sad because they can be such lovely, lovely animals.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say pit bulls and chihuahuas, I wonder why that is. I mean, why chihuahuas?
I think when those movies, for a while, the movie came out, whoever it was that was in it that had chihuahuas. And so that kind of...
The chihuahua in the purse.
Yeah, and a lot of the celebrities are carrying chihuahuas. And so it just seems like most rescue places have pit bulls and chihuahuas.
Maybe that was Legally Blonde. I'm not sure, but I remember she had the chihuahua in her purse. And I think after the movie, 101 Dalmatians or something like that, I just don't get that. They run out and then they buy Dalmatians or whatever the case may be that's in vogue, in movie vogue.
Yes. And, the thing is that... There, for almost every breed, there is a breed-specific rescue. So there, you can rescue a dog, My brother has a Great Pyrenees, two of them, that came from a rescue, you know, and they're willing to provide transportation. And so you can rescue dogs that have lost their homes rather than spend $1,200 on a dog.
That's very, very true. That's very true. I was going to read, well, because I want to talk, I want to spend some time talking about compassion and how we treat animals. And Craig brought this up too. And I know that in some states, there in the United States, there are, you can treat your animals however you want to because there are no abuse laws. And then I know that in certain countries, and I was trying to remember whether it was like Finland, but it was, they have such strict penalties for a dog, for abandonment of animals, for dog abuse. I mean, the fines would be outrageously high, and therefore they said they have totally curbed any kind of abandonment issues. So, and then people will, if there happens to be a stray, they take it in and they feed it. So their whole attitude toward animals seems to be different than our culture, kind of like this throwaway, is, as you had mentioned earlier, well, there's a storm, I'm leaving. Oh, too bad, I'll just leave my dog here. What the heck, you know? That's just beyond me. So if it's okay, I wanted to read this. He's a philosopher named Peter Singer, and he's talking about animals as that, how we treat our animals. If a being can suffer, that is the mark of how we treat each other and how we treat our animals. So I kind of wanted to maybe preface our discussion in terms of compassion by reading this, if that's okay. Sure. So philosopher Peter Singer, and maybe I should say before this, that I believe animals are sentient beings and that they feel emotions, love, pain, hunger, suffering, compassion. And philosopher Peter Singer argues that if a being can suffer, then that being needs to have certain rights in an article titled All Animals Are Equal. If a being suffers, there can be no moral justification for refusing to take that suffering into consideration. No matter what the nature of the being, the principle of equality requires that its suffering be counted equally with the like suffering of any other being. And this comes from Ethics and Sustainability. But certain practices, Singer asserts, will surely have to come to an end. The ruthless wastage of animals in research on drugs, cosmetics, that means, you know, the Dre's test on rabbits, whatever the case may be, so I can wear some cosmetics, you know, so they're going to test them on animals and torture the animals in the process. All matters of toxins, and he even goes as far as to say the inherent cannibalism of eating of the flesh of our nearest relatives, for example, chimpanzees. And we could go on to talk about circus abuse for human amusement, bullfighting, factory farms, and so on. And that Singer would argue that these should all be forbidden, not because they are cruel, but that animals have the right not to be treated so, even as we do. So, Phyllis, maybe you could talk a little bit about teaching compassion, and I think that you mentioned that part of the mission of the animal, the no-kill sanctuary, is education. So could you talk about that a little?
Sure, yeah. That I think that education is a vital part. If the parents aren't able to teach their children, then sometimes it's up to the children to teach their parents. And I think that happens a lot with environmental issues and everything. So we try to get into the elementary schools. And, you know, as I said, there's a Mrs. Masoulas at Columbia, and she periodically has her classes collect food and collars and blankets and everything for us. And so we always try to make a point of sending a letter and going to the classroom and thanking them and letting them know the effect, the far-reaching effect that they've had with their acts of kindness. Compassion needs to be taught in every way. And I think just since I have been in animal rescue, things have started to change. It's more acceptable. It's people don't just walk away when they see a hot dog in a car or, you know, anything that people used to just walk away, or even with me, where I've been called crazy, you know. And it's always amazed me that compassion should be criticized, you know, compassion of any form should be criticized. But we invite children into our thrift store. We always have handouts. And so we're hoping to build the volunteer base so that we could designate one person who could on a regular basis go out to the classrooms. I know Haven used to have Carla Jackson had a little dog that she had trained, and he was amazing. He was a little pug, and she dressed him in his little Harley jacket and hat, and so the kids really related, and he could bounce the ball back and forth, and he could, you know, he could do anything. So it got their attention, and in the meantime, she was teaching compassion the whole time. And I think that children would automatically bond with animals. They have a connection. I think you see dogs with a group of kids sometimes, and there's a bond there that they understand each other. So I think if it were reinforced, okay, you don't pull on the dog's ears, you don't, you know, the dog has feelings too, you don't treat other sentient beings like that. It's changing. It's slow, but it is changing. And I, you know, with the rules on factory farming, and Reading was even ahead of the game it's been at least 15, 20, maybe over 20 years ago that they got an ordinance passed, which is now a statewide law that you can no longer give animals in front of or sell in front of stores. That was always such a bad idea. People would sometimes take all the puppies, use them as bear bait or something, you know. There was just, and you just don't know. It's just such an impulse to take this darling little animal. Then it grows up and it needs care, and it's, you know, not as cute as it was. So not being able to do that anymore is a very good thing. And so that's part of the education. If you see someone, and you don't see that as much anymore, Parker always used to have to speak on my behalf because I would just get too wound up about it if I saw somebody doing that. You know, just call Haven, because Haven will take those animals. You're not allowed to give or sell animals in front of stores.
Now, see, I didn't know that, and I'm trying to remember as you were talking about that when the last time I saw that, because it would be like usually in a cardboard box,
yes,
and there would be like six or seven little kitties there, mm-hmm, or something. Or
that's
some
how we got one cat at Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart is famous for that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We called it Wally.
So that is illegal.
That's illegal. It
when
is now.
When did that happen?
Not so long ago in the state of California. Like I said, Reading was actually ahead of the game. It had to happen at least 20 years ago or more in Reading, because I was on the board at Haven at the time. And then just maybe a couple of years ago in the state of California. So, and, you know, you see the ads on TV, the ASPCA and HSUS. And so those messages are getting through to people, you know, when people have hoarders or these organizations that are willing to go in to just deplorable conditions and help these animals, and more animal programs. So the thinking is changing now. You know, I can't speak to the rest of the United States as much, right, but, right, you know, in California, definitely, there are more rescues everywhere. And I think that the compassion for animals is changing. And of course, with social media, when you see all of the animal videos and you see that they have thought processes, they have, you know, they feel guilty if there's a mess in the house and the people come home or something, and they're darling little videos, but there are thought processes going on there. You know, the other day on the news, I think it was east of here, a woman was in a boat. She had peripheral neuropathy and her boat turned over and she was not able to get out. Her dog grabbed her by the shoulder and then held her head above water until she could get grabbed the boat and some people could come rescue her. She had no idea that her dog would ever do that. They just inherently know, you know, they just know. And, you know, cats, people kind of brush cats aside, but the cats know too. They know a lot more. They're all little individual personalities, and they have incredible thought processes once you take the time to get to know them. And so it's wonderful for me, because my heart aches anytime I see any kind of abuse. So it's nice for me to see that the messages are getting more widespread all the time.
And I'd like to pursue that just a little bit more in terms of the benefits of the animals and what they can do for us. And I wish I could remember this poem or all the words of the poem, but the idea was that the dogs used to have wings and would fly, but they looked down at man and they realized that man needed help. And so they gave up their wings to come down to earth and help humans to become their best friends. And I was jotting down some things here because, for example, I mean, certain dogs are able to sniff diabetes or be able to tell if a person is going to have a diabetic episode. And I think they can also, I don't know how that works in terms of cancer, besides all the disabilities that dogs can be trained to help with. It's an amazing thing what animals can do for humans.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We know someone who has diabetes, and I said, you know, you might want to consider getting, because the glucose was just shifting so radically. And there are dogs. I remember meeting a woman who had adopted a dog from Haven, and she said she was in the bathtub and the dog was just going crazy. Her husband got her out and she had a seizure. And, so even when they're not trained, sometimes they know. There's some place in Pennsylvania where they do lots of studies about heart patients that recover more quickly when you have a dog or a cat, because there are so many cortisols in your body, and just the simple act of petting a dog or a cat just increases the serotonin, and it just makes you, it calms you, it makes you healthier all the time. So, you know, there are a lot of people who can attest to that. We used to work out with a guy who lost his wife, and he said, I couldn't have gotten through it without my dog. You know, it's just, every day. You know, there's that quote about you give your time and, you know, what you have left over, and your dog gives you everything, you know, gives you his whole life, his whole loyalty, his whole compassion. And so it's nice to see people with their animals, and when they're not afraid to say, I love this dog or this cat with my whole heart, you know. And it's always interesting when somebody gets a new dog, and then they'll tell you about it, and they'll say, this is the smartest dog I've ever known. And it's just that you've taken time to get to know this dog, and then you kind of get to know each other, and you get to understand, this dog understands a lot more than I ever thought they could. So they are very smart.
That is so funny, because before I have my Rottweiler mix, I was taking drumming lessons, but this fellow had an Akita, and I guess his fiance wanted white carpeting or so the Akita was banned to being tied up in the backyard, and so this man was looking for somebody to take the Akita, and I knew nothing about Akitas. I ended up taking the Akita, is the point. But I thought, there's never been a dog like this. This dog is so wonderful. I just love that dog. His name was Mambo, and I had him for 10 or 11 years until he, so sad when he passed on. And I thought I would never, ever find another dog like Mambo. And I mean, so there's not another dog like Mambo, but I was looking for another Akita because I like their personalities, and they kind of like, they'll huff, they'll just stand if they see something, you know. And so when I rescued this Rottweiler mix, I thought, this dog is just so different. But now he is, you know, he's not better than Mambo, but he's just as smart and he's just as loyal, and we have just a very strong connection. And I swear, I learn something every time I've had an animal that I didn't know before. I just didn't know. And now they help me.
They help you get through every day. Every day they make you laugh. Every day they warm your heart.
And to become a better person,
Absolutely.
Really,
yes.
Really.
Yeah.
Craig, earlier I thought you were going to say something.
Well, I was just thinking about on Facebook, they had a gal who does Irish step dancing, and her dog was f- following her and learning to step dance and doing a wonderful job of it. And it was the most amazing thing to see.
Well, there's, you know, say they so badly want to please and they want to be with you. That's all they want. And so if they think that's what you want to do, we'll do that.
Now, the thing I was wondering about is with the feral cats, that could be a real issue as far as the being kind of wanting to tear you apart. Because the reason I say that is because we took our cats that adopted us. We had four of them, and the mama had kitties underneath the porch, and we had them all fixed, including mama, of course. They were all girls. But when I was there, they were okay. They were feral, but yet they were not vicious. But there was a woman who had a cat to take it in to have it fixed, and she was going to try to adjust everything there. And people said, that cat looks like it's going crazy. I wouldn't do anything. And she did anyway before it was opened up. Haven Humane was open, and in the early morning hours. And that cat just tore her to pieces.
Really?
And then ran off. Yeah, and she had blood all over the place. And so it was a really, and I thought, wow, you know, a feral cat can be really vicious. Now
they can. I mean, they're wild animals. So you wouldn't pick up a raccoon, and you shouldn't try to pick up a feral cat. So when we deal with feral cats, we use the Have a Heart traps and take them directly to the vet, and they have a way to get them, you know, in a corner enough so that they can sedate them and then do everything they need to do, and then they're released. Several of the feral cats out at our area, eventually, once they feel safe, they calm down. You know, canned food does a lot for that. And some of them just hide. They keep their distance. They will eventually build a little bit of trust to let you get close. Not always, but some of them have come completely, you know, done a 180. We used to have, there's one cat at the sanctuary that for a while he was on the roof, and finally we got him in the house, and then he hid constantly, and now he's right out there, and I can hold a spoon of food and he will grab it with both paws and just put it in his mouth. So, you know, eventually they feel safe, they come around. But yeah, that happened at the college. A cat got in the building and somebody tried to pick it up, and you know, it, like I said, you wouldn't pick up a raccoon or a possum. You don't want to try to pick up a feral cat because they're scared to death. All they know is to get away. And so, and they turn into little twisting, biting, scratching machines. Yeah. So, yeah, that's not a good idea. You deal with them in a live trap.
Right.
Well, I wanted to ask you, another question or two. And It has to do with how involved a person should get. So I live out in the country on 5 acres, and I was driving to work, and these people on a corner had a goat tied. It was right next to the road, but there was star thistle, so they had the goat tied there thinking the goat was going to eat the star thistle along the road, and cars are zooming past. And I went, my goodness, there's this goat that's tied right there. It was a hot sun. There was nothing else out there. So I go to the college, and I come back, and the goat's still there, but this time the goat is all tangled up in the rope. And so I just stopped, and I got out, and he had a collar, so I held him by the collar. I was trying to untangle the rope that was just, because he couldn't move, you know. There was a house that was setting back a ways, and a guy comes running out and said, well, I'm watching the goat. And I said, well, he's all tangled up, and doesn't he need water? And he goes, you know, whatever. And then the goat was no longer by the side of the road. But you know, I've never had goats. I don't know about goats. I don't know whether they need to have water in the hot sun or whether, you know, they're like a camel or something. They don't need water for a while. But it just didn't seem right to have a goat tangled up by the side of the road with cars just, you know, passing by at 50, 60 miles an hour. So, and I always wondered what I would do, you know. Would I get out a cell phone if I saw somebody directly abusing an animal? What is your recommendation for dealing with situations that you think, or even but this is kind of different, as you mentioned, a dog, and people should be aware of this. I mean, when I go to Holiday Market, it's hotter than heck, and there's a dog in the car. I just can't believe it. You know, I think about this idea of, you know, breaking the window, you know. So could you speak to that a little bit? Mm-hmm. What do we as the public do?
Well, fortunately, we have Haven. So I always encourage people to put Haven's, their number in their phone, and they have an after-hours number, and of course now there is a law too that you can break into the window. You can break the window to get them out. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about the dog being tied up, I did want to...
The goat or the dog?
Well, the dog.
Okay.
There is also, I wanted to mention, a law that you can only keep a dog tied up for 2 hours at a time.
Really?
And so otherwise, again, Haven is our resource because they have the power of enforcement. And I know from experience that those confrontations turn very contentious in a hurry.
They could.
And so if you can, you know, handle it tactfully, otherwise Haven, and they're good about coming right out, you know.
Because I was wondering if there's a dog in the hot sun in a car, would Haven be able to come out right away? I mean, it seems like timing would be critical.
Critical, and that's why you can break the window. Or you can, like if it's at the store, go in the store and have them announce it on the PA system that, you know, this dog is dying. This mm-hmm. dog is dying in this car. And so take a picture of the license plate. You know, and it happens every year, dogs and children. You know,
I know.
This kind of heat, you know, if the sun is out, no one should have their dog in the car ever. You know, it's just...
I see. And I don't understand that. And we have so much information, putting out so much information about this, why people still do it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they don't get that. When they go into the store, it doesn't take very long at all for that temperature just to go way, way high.
And even in the back of a pickup.
Yes,
I know. The pickup bed is hot. I saw some young people the other day, and I said, are you taking your dog in the store? We're just going to be a minute. I said, well, it's hot. It's really hot. Nowadays, you know, people can take them into the store. You know, I know they're supposed to be a service animal, but
right.
I don't think anyone would question if you took the dog into the store. I even saw a lady do it at Petco one day. That's the one store at that time that you could take them into. And and that confrontation turned contentious.
Oh.
Yeah, it was.
So, I mean, but what is the defense of that? You know, that it's my animal, I'll do what I want.
Yes, and that's the misconception. That just like with children, you can't do what you want with animals. There are laws that protect these animals. So it doesn't matter if this is your animal, you have no right to abuse it. And, you know, when you talk about the goat, Sandy Shelby, who started this organization, was driving somewhere around Millville and found a goat. And she had just been to a meeting. She had heels and a dress on, and she stomped across that field and put that goat in the back of her car because somebody had left it tied out right by the road. It obviously didn't belong to anybody. And Haven is always the best backup, you know, because they do have the right of enforcement. And I keep both of their numbers, you know, of their animals. I called the other day because I assume it was a homeless man walking his dog right in the middle of that hot, hot pavement. And I could see the dog holding its paws up and, you know, trying to get to the shade. And the guy just kept dragging it along. And I could, we're at the gym. And so there are big windows. And this other lady and I were just distressed. And so I called Haven and they sent somebody right out. You know, and I'm sure he just was clueless, just clueless.
You know, and I think the same thing because most people, homeless or not homeless, are wearing shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And these animals, and you see, yes, it just fries their feet. The poor, So that's really good to know that we have that option that we can call Haven. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to mm-hmm. put that into my cell phone. Do you have any recommendations in terms of, you know, I get bombarded with so many different places asking for money, and they're all worthwhile, it
Absolutely.
Seems to me, you know, from pig sanctuaries to factory farm animals, you know, being taken into Best Friends to greyhounds to, it just goes on and on, you know, International Fund for Animals. What would your recommendation be for giving? Would it be giving locally? What do you think?
Well, they are definitely all worthy organizations, and they have their place. I get those publications, too. Obviously, if you give to one of the local, you know, like with us, we're volunteers. You know,
right.
I think we have one paid person part-time, and she puts in about 40 to 60 hours a week. so you know that you're not paying for any overhead. You're not paying high administrative costs. Your money goes directly to help the animals when you help locally. And
yes.
And even with Haven, even though they've got a lot of paid people and they, you know, they have contracts with city and county and stuff, they're out there, you know, coming up against with those contentious confrontations every day. And so they're worthy. And any, you can see on, I think on the Friday paper where, you know, Pets Without Partners or Tales of Rescue or Raining Cats and Dogs, all of these organizations, Snip and Bernie, they all work hard.
Yes.
And it is a labor of love, like I said. And so when you give locally, then you give directly to the animals. But I know, you know, like when Katrina happened, there was ASPCA and HSUS, and they're mm-hmm. right there on the front lines helping.
You know, and I saw photos of that. I mean, people in boats, you know, going, people in boats holding dogs, or people, you know, I just remember this young man, and he was carrying this dog, you know, through the water. I mean, it was just, mm-hmm. it just really touched my heart, you know,
yeah.
that there are people who are indeed doing these kinds of things to help our sweet, sweet animals. We only have about 5 minutes left, and before we remind the audience about ways to contact your organization, is there anything else that you want to leave us with in terms of topics for, or not really topics, but anything else that we can do, or that, you know, obviously we can go to your website, and I want to remind listeners about that. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? And Craig may have a comment or question too.
Well, always, you know, the campaign is always spay and neuter your pets. If everyone spayed and neutered, it yeah. would stop. It would stop so much. You know, that you see the posters all the time of how many babies the cats and dogs can have, and it's just incredible. So, you know, when people ask and you say, okay, you can help by adopting, and if you can't adopt, then foster, and if mm-hmm. you can't foster, then volunteer. Yeah. And if you can't volunteer, then donate. Mm-hmm. And if you can't donate, then educate. And that's what you're doing every time, like you say, you ask, you tell this guy, this goat is tied up, he needs water, and they definitely do need water. Then every time you see a situation that you know isn't right, you don't just drive by.
Yeah.
You stop yes. and you help.
And Craig, did you want to say anything else? Or?
Well, this is a good chance to remind our listeners about the upcoming event on September 9th,
Yes, September 9th. It's the same weekend at Honeybee Festival mm-hmm. in Palisadro. And so we're kind of joining in the festivities out there. And so we will have breakfast burritos right out in front of the store and be selling some of our things. There are always great sales at our store. It is, no one should ever, if you like reading novels or most any kind of books, we have all kinds of books, and most of the time they're like 10 cents a piece, so there are some bargains to be had, and we have a bunch of wonderful cooks, and so the food is always excellent, so it's fun. You know, usually there's some music going on, and they sell
yes.
plants and all kinds of good stuff, so stop by and get a bargain and get a breakfast burrito.
Okay, well, very good. I'm glad to hear about that. I went to your store, and I got a wonderful DVD of A Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that's my favorite musical of all time, and I still remember getting it there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're always, yeah, you should check for DVDs and books and, like I said, kitchen things. And quite often we get furniture, and every once in a while we'll have a big storage unit sale, and the lady, Joyce, who runs the store, does an excellent job. Every once in a while she'll have a jewelry sale, and there are rock bottom prices. It's something for everybody.
So we want to encourage our listeners to go to the Honeybee Festival on September the 9th and support the
And our thrift store, Another Chance Animal Welfare League. We are right next to the dollar store and right in the Holiday Shopping Center. So always something fun going on there.
And once again, you can go to the website, ACAWL. And it has links. I mean, it has links to other organizations as well, but it explains what Phyllis Pollack has been talking about here today, too, with the organization that she works with, which is wonderful. And I want to thank Phyllis Pollack very much for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Dig This Environmental Watch. And I want to remind our listeners that this is KKRN, Community Supported Radio. This is Dig This Environmental Watch. And tune in next Saturday for Dig This Trump Watch. Okay. Bye for now.